Welcome back to Eco Justice Radio. This is part two of episode 116, Lost Children of Turtle Island, The Impact of Indian Boarding Schools. I am your host, Jessica Aldridge, and we continue our conversation with guest Sunrose Ironshell and Manape Lemaire, government representative of the Sioux Nation of Indians. In part two, we continue the discussion around the Indian boarding schools, the missing white woman syndrome as it compares to missing and murdered Indigenous women, and an update on the rejection of the Keystone XL pipeline.
What about the Indian Child Welfare Act? So there's four tribal nations that have come together to petition the U.S. Supreme Court to uphold the Indian Child Welfare Act to protect Native children, the families, and tribal sovereignty. What are they requesting?
Well, just to give you a little bit of history on that, what we call ICWA was established in 1978 because these states were profiting off of the kidnapping of our children from sovereign nations and their families. And so Congress seen the writing on the wall and said, we got to do something about this. We're passing a law. Well, just like with the Civil Rights Act, it takes a while before people, you know what? I go down to City Hall and I watch all these city officials stand up and do the Pledge of Allegiance before they have their city council meeting. But then when it comes time, when Congress tells you that you need to start following the Civil Rights Act, when you need to start following ICWA and the religious freedom, all of a sudden they forget about their oath. So anytime they do that Pledge of Allegiance before that, I don't even stand up because I need to see more. I need to see more. I need to see some people on the American side don't even realize that they are subject to a treaty. They have a treaty too. They're on the other side, right? But nobody's telling them these things. I think realizing that your own federal government is saying what you're doing, you can't do that anymore. Here's the policies and procedures on how you deal with our friends, the Indians, because the state isn't trying. And I'm telling you, that is the mentality that the federal government considers it that way. Our friends, the Indians, you can't do that with them. And so they establish that the state throws a fit, and it's taken at least 30 years. My dad was an advocate for ICWA. And one of the laws in ICWA, for people that don't know, one of the laws that they have a hard time enforcing, one is when a caseworker is dealing with an Indian family, how do we contact? Who do we contact? Who do we reach out to? Then if that child is taken away, ICWA was always about this Indian child is always being placed with a non-Native foster family. Now, how is this kid going to get some of the cultural things that they need? Because they sense it. They feel it. I'm an Indian, and I don't know any Indians. I'm in this town. I'm with this family. They don't know nothing either. I guess I'm nobody. So the thing is people have been advocating and speaking for these children. We have a march here in Sioux City every year to honor children lost in the system. They die because some of these foster parents murder them. And I imagine the numbers are probably even greater in California. This is out in Iowa, Nebraska, South Dakota. But regardless, we're 40 years from that, and we struggle having the state that swears and that pledges allegiance. We can't get them to enforce these things fully. What's the checklist that a non-Native foster family has? Well, you got to provide culture and things like that. Who goes and checks that? It doesn't exist. And so we need people from higher up to work their way down and enforce some of that stuff. But I want everybody to listen to recordings that are out there on YouTube of my father when he talks about our community. My father's name was Frank Lemire. We lost him a couple years ago on Father's Day. On June 16th, 2019, he was an advocate and spoke up for these children that had no voice. And he's been challenging the states on the blatant kidnapping of our children. And so it continues. It may not be the boarding school, but in the urban setting, it's easy. Somebody can just call and say, hey, I seen do a welfare check. I seen some shenanigans, and they come over and they find something simple wrong, and you're in the system for 6 months. And take your kids and go put them somewhere else. So the case you're referring to, Texas is filing, they're taking it to the Supreme Court. They're challenging ICWA. And the reason why is because there was a couple that had gotten wealthy. They were Christian. They believed in tithings. And one of the tithings that they wanted to do is take in the unfortunate, the white heroes, so to speak. They're going to take in the unfortunate. And they adopted this Navajo, half Navajo Cherokee kid back in 2016. And after some time with this kid, the tribe stepped up and said, where's this kid? We want him back. And so the state stepped in and said, they want him. We got to send the kid back. And so the family challenged it. And then the family even said they wanted that boy's sister, too, who was Navajo. And they challenged the court system. And they've taken it all the way to the Supreme Court because they say that ICWA is racist, that there's no racial equity in it. Because when you look at the financials of the family, it looks kind of dangerous. And the kids are safer with a white family that's got money. But we're quantifying what is family, and we're quantifying what is a healthy home. What does that look like? Are these kids better off with their traditional family or with their tribe? One of those kids aren't even going to be put with family, but they're going to be put with a tribal member. So right now, if we have the wrong people on the bench, we could be losing ICWA, and the state will have a free-for-all on our people.
Sunrose, you are also featured in an upcoming film, and that's called The Woman of the White Buffalo. Can you tell us about that film and why people should check it out, and where and when will it be available?
Woman of the White Buffalo, the feature documentary film, was shot in 2012 as a series of Lakota women, or women from the Sioux Nation, the Ocheti Shakoin, on how we are surviving through our traumas. So there are some stories of women who age from, I think she was 12, to our Unchi Marie Randall, who lived to be 102, 101, and just various stages of our life and how we're doing. So there's a teenager, there's the 20-year-old, the 30-year-old, the 40-year-old, the 50-year-old, and we each talk about the dynamics in our life and how, you know, the United States government, in so many words, has created a platform where we just sprung up, and here we are. But we've come from historical traumas that have kept us in a box, put us in this little cubicle where we can't breathe, where we're going missing and murdered, you know, 10 times the national average as an Indigenous woman. I'm at risk to be stolen. So does that mean I should leave by myself and go on these trips by myself if it's 10 times more likely? And these are the realities that we're facing. So the film talks about our stories of our just simple reality and living as Lakota women. And how are we striving through that? How are we trying to make a change? How has the system changed us? And so there's the trailer out on the Women of the White Buffalo film.com. And it goes into a lot of more details on each individual women's story. And that was filmed by Deborah Anderson. And Deborah Anderson, she is the daughter of John Anderson from the famous band Yes. And he sings, Owner of a Broken Heart. And so she had been in the Hollywood scene for a while, not really connected, we'll say, to her own Indigenous identity. But the basis of the film, the main message through the film is that we all need to reawaken our own identity, because all human beings are Indigenous to this earth. Unless you're from Mars, then rep Mars. So we have ancestries that we connect to. And each human nature ancestry has basic instructions on how to live on Earth. Now, some tribes have broken away from their tribal ways and have, you know, created new ways of living. But each human being belongs to a tribe. They're all indigenous and they're all tribal nations who have once lived off of the earth. So these stories are all about how to reawaken yourself and re-engage that identity.
And is the film out or is it coming out soon?
Coming out. I believe it's safe to say January 2022.
Very good. And there is there's another thing that you do. I'm going to ask about the Keystone XL pipeline in a second, but because we're talking about this film and getting the message out there, you also started a 10-minute social media news drop. I want you to tell us about that. You know, what are you speaking to? Why you felt that this outlet needed to be there, and how can people find it?
So on our social media pages, Women of the White Buffalo Instagram and Women of the White Buffalo social media, we got a lot of feedback of where's the Native news? We never hear about the Indians. All my life, I've encountered people who have never met a Native American, Indian, Indigenous person before. And through this film, all of a sudden, that's what the crowd is. And we keep saying, you know, we exist, we're still here. And so I had an interview with John Anderson to ask him, I'm always curious, you know, to ask white people, what have you heard of other Indians? You know, when was the first time you met an Indian? So I got to interview him on our webpage. And that's when he was like, you know what? I never hear about the Indian. And this is your country. Why isn't there any news? And, you know, I go on my social media pages and I see nothing but Indian news. And we're caught in this bubble. And I believe it's a spiritual warfare. It's a little uncanny. Why is it, you know, Facebook and Instagram is supposed to be a platform that you can speak to the world, but yet only Indians see my posts or I only see other Indian posts? Those algorithms that keep us in these bubbles. And so we can't really break out of that bubble. So I started doing Native news, and it's basically my Facebook timeline that I'm just sharing out there. And my last Native news reached 1 million people. So
wow, that's great.
Celebration. And it's October.
I think one of the inspirations too is over in New Zealand, the Maori people have their own TV station where they do their own news all in Maori. They have their own political party. They have a political and economic influence. I don't know when we're going to move past that damned if we do, damned if every, even today, we're still kind of damned if we do, damned if we don't. But, and it's going to take some big dreamers, and it's going to take more than allies. It's going to take accomplices in order to help us empower ourselves. And I really draw a lot of inspiration when it comes to news and information. They do it in the Maori language, which is incredible. When you go to their schools, you'll see not just Maoris doing the haka. Everybody got to do the haka, no matter what race you are. You do the haka. And I love that. That's a cultural bridge. Man, it would be incredible to see people joining in fellowship in that way, sincerely. Because I tell you what, they're going to be teaching the Ocheti Shakoni curriculum in South Dakota. They're trying to remove some of it, but they're going to teach it. And I had to tell some of my relatives, I said, you know, non-native teachers, South Dakota's 85% European Americans, 85%, which means most of your teachers, most of your students are going to be non-native learning this. More people are going to know that some of those Lakota teachings than our own Indian people. I already know what the response is going to be. Well, yeah, but they're learning it in a book. Well, one of these days, it's going to be more than just a book, though. And we have to be able to be in place so you don't have non-native experts. And we have to start empowering people that live it. We try to live this way. So I just want to share that. And I could see that with our relatives over there, our Maori relatives, we could see that with them.
So one of the areas of topic that we wanted to just briefly discuss, a little bit of a side conversation to today, is that of the Keystone XL pipeline, because there's been some big decisions that have been made recently. And with the Biden administration, they formally revoked the Keystone XL permit that would have carried 830,000 barrels a day of Alberta oil sands crude to Nebraska from Canada. Now that that project has been revoked, what has taken place in the areas where those oil camps were set up? And that goes back to that conversation, like, why all the listeners to say, go back and listen to episode 51, where our conversation, we talked about the atrocities that were happening in those camps that are associated with building out oil pipelines. So now that it's been revoked, what's happening?
Well, we got that big win. Biden administration revoked. And what's transpired is, like, a lot of those places where the pipeline was being stored, they just sat idle for a long time. The camps where the camps were going to go, idle. They've been idle for a year at least. Anyways, but the greatest victories were happening, I think, with more of the local stuff, where the company's permits were being rescinded, water permits and things like that, the stuff that they need in order for drilling or for these camps to happen. And you know what? These non-Native communities throughout South Dakota, they owe us a debt of gratitude, not just for preserving their water, but these companies were going to have authority over drinking water. In order to operate drilling platforms and things like that, you have to have access to some things, you know, in order to get some of this stuff flowing. You know, the oil that they were going to use, that they were going to run through that, is different than stuff from the Bakken, which is up on the three affiliated tribes. That's the starting point for Dakota Access Pipeline. This form is lighter. It's soluble. It's not like the current oil spill offshore with you guys
in California. In California, in Orange County.
Yeah, that is a thicker form of crude. You know, and it's heavy crude. It's black and it's not water soluble, and that's why it clumps up. But the stuff coming from the tar sands, they actually have to run hot steam through it. And then water kind of mixes with the sand and it washes down and it's thinner and lighter. And they can send it through these, they can send more of it through these pipelines. That doesn't rise, that sinks. So we're sitting over one of the largest aquifers on the planet, underground aquifers on the planet, called the Ogallala Aquifer. It's named after a nation or a band of a nation. That would taint all the water from here down to Texas. Every farmer between here and Austin taps into that. Every single farmer, they drill those wells and they have a free for all, free water. And that's what grows our crops. And the more crops we squeeze into an acre, the more bushels we have squeezed into an acre, the more water you need to grow it, you know. And so I can't even imagine how do you quantify that? Since colonizers like to quantify anything, I'd like them to quantify how much hassle we just saved South Dakota. They quantify everything else. But we don't ever get to hear those sort of numbers or those sort of statistics. And that would be interesting to me if any of your listeners have that mathematical ability. Mm-hmm. What do you think that would be? It has to be billions, billions and billions of dollars. We just saved many states this sort of headache and all the families and ranchers that wouldn't be able to water their crops.
But you know what's still there is the riot boosting law and the militarization of the police departments that happened all around those counties. And they got all this new equipment and they got riot gear. So that's still there.
Complete waste of time.
Tanker truck, tank trucks or whatever they have, and military massive vehicles.
They created a fund for if I were to get arrested on the front line, any money that I would, any money, any fines that I'd have to pay would go into that to compensate the law enforcement. And they called it was an acronym. They called it the Peace Fund. And that's still there. That is still there. But yeah, it was an acronym, P-E-A-C-E fund. And I can't remember what it was, but...
it's not peace, whatever it was. It's not peace.
And something, I don't know. But that's still on the books. Complete waste of time. But that's how scared they are of us. You know, that and I always wondered that there's a tribal liaison in South Dakota. Nobody supports him. They ain't no tribes and people that support him, but he's a kiss ass to that governor Noem. And I didn't see him shaking some doors. I'd have been pounding on some door. What the hell? You know, but regardless, those laws are still in place. And it'll be interesting the next shenanigans that they start to pull in South Dakota, how that'll be reawakened.
One of the things with the camps, and not just the camps across the United States and Canada, is, and you had brought this up, Sunrose, was the murdered, missing Indigenous women, MMIW. And currently in our news that we're hearing on a daily basis here, we're hearing about a woman who went missing, was found, who ended up dead. She happens to be a white woman. So there's this concept around the missing white woman syndrome. And this individual is getting, her name is Gabby. She's getting a lot of attention in the media. But then again, we have, as you said, staggering numbers of missing, murdered Indigenous women. So before we close up today, I just wanted to give you the opportunity to speak to this.
Well, I'd like to congratulate the media because these are some big steps. Now, maybe 10 years ago, we would have had the missing white woman out there, but you wouldn't have heard all the backlash. The internet has been able to give a lot of Indigenous people a voice to type it up and say, hey, yo, we are missing too. And so I want to congratulate the media because they've kind of taken a few steps where they actually mentioned us on the news. Every time an Indigenous person, Native American, any time that's mentioned in the news, that is a very small victory to us. And I'm like, oh, Indians on TV! Oh, I am excited about it. And so, you know, Gabby went missing and we heard all about it. And in that same region in Wyoming, 710 Indigenous people went missing. But they did not get any of those resources, the helicopter flyover, the extra manpower to do a search.
The manhunt for the person that committed the crime?
Mm-hmm. There's no manhunts like that for Indigenous people, which reiterates the fact that we're kind of still at war. And that's your American duty, is to erase my people. So when you come across an opportunity, maybe those investigators, the police department, to search for Indigenous person, is something way back in there. Maybe it's in that Pledge of Allegiance or something. Unconsciously persuades them from looking for us, you know, in a lack of better words. I'm not going to say, oh, they're straight out racist and they're not going to look for us. But then it goes back to the jurisdiction. Indians are prisoner of war and we don't have the right jurisdictions over us. And so when somebody goes missing, they're like, oh, okay, we don't have jurisdiction. All of a sudden, the police departments don't have jurisdiction over Indigenous people and they kind of pass it off. So this missing white woman syndrome brought it all up. And today's age in internet and being able to have that voice and have those Twitter accounts, right? And the media, those journalists are understanding that, you know, looking on what's trending, and they're realizing that. Just the other day, Lester Holt, you know, talked about that. And he also talked about African-Americans going missing and minorities going missing and not getting those resources. And then for like 30 seconds, he talked about MMIW. And there was a banner, one of Auntie Lydia Ponce, shout out to Lydia Ponce. She was on she was on Lester Holt National News for 10 seconds. And that was a victory. That was such a victory. So America is waking up. It's not fast enough, though. It is not quick enough, because I shouldn't have to see that time span in my lifetime. It should already be boom, boom, boom. You're a United States citizen? Yep, I've been a United States citizen. I got a Social Security number. I am on the books. I'm a taxpayer. You know, look for me when I go missing. Don't leave it up to the tribe, because the tribe only has boundaries. And they can only look for me if I go missing there. So it is a victory. It is a small victory. There's awakening. This white woman syndrome, I'm glad there's a name for it, because back there wasn't a name for it. People didn't identify it. Now we're identifying it. Now we can take the steps to overcome that.
Also, I'd like to add that Gabby's father also mentioned that there was some during one of his interviews had advocated for us as well, you know, and we needed him to say that. You know, because we want to give all that respect and those condolences to his family. You know, there's a lot of people that are being looked for right now. We end up having to walk through fields, and there's a lot of, we do a lot of networking. So we hear a lot of stuff, a lot of activity going on out there, funerals and missing people. Just it's tough. It's tough to sort all that stuff out. But I'm glad Gabby's father said what he said and mentioned that there is a disproportionate amount of things happening out there. And I wish that we had those resources for those folks too.
He used his platform in order to speak up for missing and murdered Indigenous women and peoples. And yeah. Well, before we wrap here, our last question, so the people can find you, that they can follow your work, they can follow what you're doing, Sunrose, with the media drops. So, and also just so they can provide support. If people are listening right now and they're like, I would actually love to support your efforts in some way, shape, or form, what would you tell them?
How you can reach out and follow me is through Women of the White Buffalo Film. They've really taken in the initiative to let me hold that narrative and be a part of that camera. And it's been one of my biggest platforms. I do still post on my personal pages. And a lot of that is like happy birthdays to my man and, you know, family stuff. But when I really talk about social issues is on Women of the White Buffalo Instagram page and the social media film. But my Instagram page, I like posting all my artwork, is at Living Warrior Status, LIVEN Warrior Status.
Manape, how do they find you?
But I just kind of stick with Facebook. You can find me at Manape Lemire. And lately I've been working with a few different groups. A lot of social justice stuff around Sioux City. But I'll tell you what. Our friends and relatives over at Great Plains Action Society is doing a lot of great stuff. There's a lot of energy there. And they operate out of the territory around here and throughout the occupied place of Iowa. They call Iowa. And we're also working with the Urban Indian Center out of Sioux City. So that's some of the stuff you got the names.
Definitely follow us at Great Plains Action Society. We both are contributors to that page and share a lot of posts and do a lot of actions through them.
That's great. And we're going to put some of those resources in our blog. And thank you to both of you, to Sunrose, to Manape, and a special thanks to Auntie Lydia Ponce for always bringing us together.
Love you, Lydia.
The godmother of Venice Beach.
Love you, Lydia. And thank you to our listeners and to both of you. Thanks so much for being on the show. We greatly appreciate you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you to our guests today, Sunrose Ironshell and Manape Lemaire. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. This has been part two of Lost Children of Turtle Island. And in case you missed it, check out part one of today's episode 116. You can find it on ecojusticeradio.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Please connect with us on social media. You can find us at EcoJustice Radio, SoCal350, and Adventures in Waste. And if you like what you heard and you want others to be informed, you know what to do. Subscribe to our podcast, share the episodes, get that information out there, and help us continue our efforts by making a donation to the show at ecojusticeradio.org. You have been listening to EcoJustice Radio on KPFK Los Angeles, a project of SoCal 350. The show can be found on kpfk.org, all major podcast apps, and at ecojusticeradio.org. Created by Mark and J.P. Morse, executive producer Jack Eich, producer and co-host Jessica Aldridge, co-host Carrie Kim, engineer Blake Lampkin, and original music by Javier Cadre. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.